This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Investors reassess the Fed's rate strategy and their bullish stance on U.S. stocks.
Early this year, the market was expecting that interest rates might fall by perhaps a full percentage point. Now, the market is telling us that it basically doesn't expect the Fed to cut rates at all this year.
Plus, Britain's prime minister hopes a visit to the U.S. nets the U.K. an economic boost. And more delivery delays for Boeing after it finds a new defect on its 787 Dreamliner. It's Wednesday, June 7th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. And let's begin this morning by taking a pulse of the global economy on the back of fresh trade data from China and an OECD report on the worldwide growth outlook. And who better to pull it all together than Journal finance editor Alex Frangos. All right, we've got Chinese export data in for May showing a decline of 7.5% compared to a year ago when, right, there were widespread lockdowns in China. What should we make of that?
Well, I don't know if you should make much of it for the Chinese economy. It's more a reflection of the rest of the world, because what that's saying is China is exporting, sending goods out to the rest of the world at a decline. So that means the rest of the world is buying less stuff from China. So perhaps it's obviously not good for China either, because they earn a lot of money from their exports, but it's also a sign that the rest of the world has slowed down. Now, some of that is still the after effects of the pandemic. There was this huge boom in buying of stuff. People bought goods when they were locked down. And then once people were free, they shifted their spending to services, things like travel, hotels, things that can't be exported across the sea. And so China's sending less stuff.
Right. And I suppose on the China front, imports dropped 4.5% from a year earlier compared to a 7.9% decline in April. So maybe there is demand within China for the products the rest of the world is making.
Those numbers came in almost better than economists expected, meaning they were importing more than people expected, a sign that the internal economy in China, world's second largest, is opening up and doing all the things that folks in other countries started doing, 18 months or 2 years ago. So, yeah, I think the numbers showed that the domestic opening is still going on, but that the global trade outlook is tepid.
Staying at the global level, we've got this OECD growth outlook for the world economy out this morning, and we had a World Bank report yesterday. What are these forecasts showing us?
I mean, these are two big international organizations that put out these reports telling us where the economy is going to go in the future. They're often wrong, but they give us a good sense of what we think is going on. And they kind of went in opposite directions. The World Bank, a little bit more optimistic than they used to be. The OECD, a little bit less optimistic than they used to be. But they both agreed that the big risks to the global economy are the big rise in interest rates. Basically, you make money more expensive, the economy slows down, and you're starting to see risks with banks, with borrowers, especially in real estate and other places. And if those things start blowing up, they can have secondary and tertiary effects, like that this year will be slower than last year, and next year maybe not an amazing year of growth. But in fact, the global economy has done a little bit better than people expected this year so far.
That was Wall Street Journal European finance editor Alex Frangos. Alex, thanks.
Thanks.
UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is in Washington today ahead of a meeting with President Biden on Thursday. Our UK correspondent Max Colchester told me that Sunak is hoping that the visit boosts economic ties for post-Brexit Britain.
The main purpose of this trip is really to translate Britain's deep security ties with the US into something more economically tangible. Sunak is pointing out that the UK has been a firm ally of the US. A key part of that is whether the UK can get a piece of the Inflation Reduction Act, this huge subsidy program that the Biden administration announced to try and boost the growth of clean energy companies in the US. But it's unclear whether he will come away with anything tangible. After the UK quit the EU, it got the right to negotiate its own trade deals. And for a long time, it pushed to try and seal one with the US. But the Biden administration has basically nixed that plan, saying it's not willing to do a full-scale trade deal with the UK. And so that doesn't look like that's something that's going to happen in the medium term.
And Boeing says that deliveries of its 787 Dreamliner will be delayed in the coming weeks after finding a defect related to a fitting on the plane's horizontal stabilizer. It is the latest in a string of setbacks for the plane maker. The FAA said that Boeing notified regulators about the defect and that it wouldn't approve any Dreamliners for delivery until the matter is addressed to the regulators' satisfaction. However, Boeing said that the new problem does not present an immediate safety risk and that it isn't expected to affect the company's overall target of delivering 70 to 80 Dreamliners this year. Coming up, a few months can make all the difference in what investors expect from the Fed. We'll look at the new consensus on interest rates and what it could mean for this year's Wall Street rally after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The wind on Wall Street is changing direction. Traders began the year betting on a big drop in inflation. But 6 months on, Journal Markets reporter Matt Grossman says that persistent economic strength now has investors backing off those predictions. And Matt joins me now from New York to recap this major shift in inflation expectations among investors. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to play a short clip of you speaking to my colleague Anne-Marie Fertoli. This was on January 23rd, and you were talking about what investors at that time were predicting about the Federal Reserve's course on rate hikes. And I just want to play a short clip of that.
Most people on Wall Street are expecting them to raise interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point on February 1st, which would be the slowest move since early last year. And that's basically priced in, that we have a couple more small hikes on the way. What isn't priced in would be any interest rate hikes beyond that. In fact, the markets are now expecting the Fed to cut rates by the end of this year.
All right, Matt. Suffice it to say, the thinking seems to have really shifted quite a bit since then. Break that down for us and how you are measuring that change in sentiment.
So the biggest change in market's expectations for what the Fed's going to do relates to whether or not the central bank's going to cut rates before the end of the year. Early this year, the market was expecting that interest rates might fall by perhaps a full percentage point by December or January. Now the market is telling us that it basically doesn't expect the Fed to cut rates at all this year.
And Matt, what is driving this shift in sentiment? Just a month ago, according to data from Tradeweb, derivatives markets were showing that investors thought the Fed's target rate would be at 5% at the end of the year. Now that's a full percentage point lower at 4%. These are major swings. What's behind that?
Yeah, so a lot of people have expected that eventually the Fed's interest rate increases are going to slow the economy down and perhaps cause a recession. Basically, we've had, with some exceptions, 4 or 5 months of strong economic data that continually make it seem like that recession is not necessarily right around the corner. Last week, we had a report showing that the economy added almost 350,000 jobs in May, which is not recessionary, to say the least. So inflation has slowed down quite a bit since a year ago, but it's still well above the Federal Reserve's target. And that kind of leads to the question of, well, would we really think that these central bank officials are going to cut interest rates before inflation has gotten down to that 2% number that they like to see? So I think that has made people skeptical of rate cuts this year.
If investors now have their finger on the pulse of the Fed's future course of action, what effect might that have on markets, more specifically for a very bullish U.S. stock rally that's sort of defined the year to date?
Yeah, it's actually a very tricky question because there are sort of two different effects that might work against each other. So on the one hand, the idea that interest rates were going to be lower by the end of the year was very helpful for the stock market so far this year. On the other hand, you know, if the economy is going to be stronger than we thought it was at the end of the year, that could be great for corporate profits and good for the dividends that you get as a stockholder. So the effect's a little bit ambivalent. People on Wall Street are definitely kind of antsy about stocks. My colleague Hardika Singh has a great article just in the last few days about how Wall Street has really put on very bearish bets about where the S&P is going to go next. Of course, they've been wrong about a lot of things over the last 2 years, so it's hard to put a lot of stock in any given moment's market bets.
Matt, I'm glad you mentioned Hardika's piece, which was eye-opening to us insofar as she's saying, yeah, you have seen the S&P 500 do quite well this year, but it has largely been driven by just seven big tech firms. The very same tech firms that you write were especially boosted by expectations previously that rates would be falling before December. Is there more of a downside risk to markets than we've perhaps reckoned with here?
Yes. So there's almost a bit of an irony there where as people have come to expect tighter Fed policy through the year, the best performing stocks are some of these names like Amazon, Apple, Meta that were really suffering a lot last year. One argument I've heard is that people sort of like these names because they have such a huge operation, a huge balance sheet, that in a recession, they probably could come out okay. You could say that the S&P rally is kind of hanging on by a thread because those handful of names have been so important in driving what the broader index does.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Matt Grossman. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
The U.S. and India are close to a deal on manufacturing jet fighter engines in the South Asian nation, according to officials and defense executives. The new assembly plants for General Electric engines for India's fighter jets are expected to be announced when Prime Minister Narendra Modi visits Washington later this month. And Journal reporter Rajesh Roy says the deal could help India to wean itself from a long-standing reliance on Russia for military equipment.
The deal with US is likely to upset Moscow a bit. However, India needs a massive boost to its defense capabilities to keep pace with China's rapid military modernization. Tech transfer and co-development of cutting-edge weapon systems with the US can help India close the strategic gap with China in all three domains, land, air, and water.
Some of CNN's highest-profile hosts are reportedly expressing concern about the ability of CEO Chris Licht to keep leading the network after a series of blunders in recent months. People close to the situation say that Jake Tapper, Aaron Burnett, and Anderson Cooper are among some of the CNN personalities who have voiced concerns of Licht's leadership in conversations with management. The anger inside CNN isn't exclusively directed at Licht, with concerns also aimed at Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav, who some staffers and talent say has been much more hands-on than previous owners of CNN. CNN declined to comment. Turning to Washington, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has declined to commit to providing additional financial support for Ukraine, putting him at odds with Senate Republicans who want more military spending. The disagreement over new funding follows last week's debt ceiling deal, which ensures that discretionary military spending will rise 3% in 2024, but with a possible 1% cut from fiscal 2023 levels if Congress doesn't pass all 12 annual appropriations bills by the end of the calendar year. McCarthy said on Tuesday that while he supports Kyiv, he didn't want to pursue an additional spending package, indicating that it would need clear justification from proponents and saying he wouldn't schedule a floor vote on a supplemental military spending bill, even if the Senate passes such a measure. And former Vice President Mike Pence is expected to launch his 2024 presidential bid later today. Pence joins a crowded field of GOP hopefuls looking to win the Republican Party's nomination. Yesterday, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie launched his campaign, taking direct aim at those Republicans who have so far refused to criticize former President Donald Trump directly.
I've seen some of the press coverage of me getting ready to run. And there's this thing like, Christie doesn't really care about winning. All he cares about doing is destroying Trump. Now let me ask you something. How are those two things mutually exclusive?
North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum will also enter the race today, bringing the GOP field to roughly 10 candidates. And finally, a raft of new laws from Utah to France are attempting to keep kids off social media. That comes amid evidence that companies aren't doing enough on their own to limit what young people can see or do on sites like TikTok and Instagram. But WSJ tech reporter Sam Schechner says that proposed age verification tools, which could entail using an official ID or analyzing a user's face with a webcam to estimate how old they are leaving adults divided.
There is a lot of debate, actually, between, on one hand, child protection advocates who are concerned about the impact of social media on teens and kids. And then on the other side, you have digital rights groups and even some parents who say, wait, hold on a second. The solutions might be worse than the problem in their view. It could create privacy risks if, say, the IDs or other information that people use to verify their ages get hacked. And it could also just have a chilling effect on how people access media. Sometimes people might not want to even use a service if to do so they would have to verify their age.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.